Baba's forgiveness is so vast we cannot even see it all because our vision is limited. But he forgave, and then he said, never do it again. You see, and if he looked sad at what had been done, it was also for the person, knowing that person will have to pass through that. You cannot escape. You cannot say, I'll have this, and yet I will not pay. No. My father, when I was so little, I remember his words, God's child, God says, have what you want and pay for it. But Baba is so compassionate, he minimizes it. You know, he makes the price less. He says, all right, like that man said, with the material for me. It's 8 rupees, but I'll give it to you for 4 rupees. Mm. Remember, no matter what we go through, because we're linked with Baba and his compassion, we are having it less than we would have. What? It is always less. But we'll not escape. That is not the way of growing. We have to go through it. So he tells you now. But when that happened, he said, even us, sometimes we forget. Baba said, every day this window must be closed like this. And this is the third time I've forgotten to do it. And Baba says to Meru, or me, whoever it was, after being flashing, he said, all right, I forgive. But next time, don't do it. Next time, I won't forgive. And we do it next time. And again, he forgave. His forgiveness has no end.
So what I was saying was not necessarily the way Jesus dealt with Mary Magdalene, but the way Jesus dealt with the critics who criticized Jesus for bringing Mary Magdalene into his fold. Were there instances like that with Baba where people would criticize Baba for saying, oh, Baba, you shouldn't have that person around you, and because they would be...
Well, there were very rare instances like... I don't think we've ever said to Baba, you shouldn't have so-and-so around. The way Baba would pour out so much attention to that person, and Erich has protested a couple of times. But that instance, what were you saying before that?
The way that people criticize
yeah.
Jesus.
No, for that Baba said, when they criticized Baba, Baba said once, see the depth of an understanding, how superficial and shallow is our depth of understanding, even if we can call it depth. And Baba said, those who are against, who criticize me, they also do my work. And he said, they're like the arrow, bow and arrow. You know, when you want to shoot an arrow, you pull it back. The further back you pull it, the further forward it goes. And those who are like that, who are, again, that means opposite, back, once they're released, they'll even go further. So nothing is not used for his work. Nothing is wasted. Even criticism is useful because it is linked with him. You're criticizing him. He is who he is. Whatever link, whatever connection, no matter adverse looking or praiseworthy, whatever, it becomes a momentous thing. Even criticism, because it is criticizing him, then has fruit, bears fruit. It's never barren. Because he's reality. It, even when illusion is touched by reality, there is life. The Baba's forgiveness has this to me most. And I tell you, pleasing Baba, some have asked me, what were the happiest moments of your life with Baba? I hadn't thought of it, but because of the question I thought, and I realized that the happiest moments were when, by his grace, I'd done something that pleased him. And he said to me, looking at me, I'm happy. You've pleased me. Oh, you'd be on air. What else is there? Higher than that, to receive, to want, to long for, to please him. Even Baba himself places that. He places that above God realization. My favorite Baba quote, which I have on my letter pad, is, if you love me as St. Francis loved Jesus, you would not only realize me, but you would please me. Not only that, but that. So it doesn't matter how many lives it takes, how many years it takes, let that be the goal.
Many of us praising when I stayed with Baba for 1 month, 1 month. I knew only 2 bhajans, you know, songs. So every day he used to listen to 2 bhajans. Same old bhajans I used to repeat every day, you know. And every day he used to praise me. Oh, today it's very good. Today it was very nice. Same 2 old bhajans. For 1 month I was singing the same. I couldn't remember any other. I was so small. But he said, oh, today it was very good. Better than before.
So that you have seen before Baba.
Yeah.
Somebody singing absolutely out of tune. Somebody thinking this is a grand song I've composed, which feels like nothing on earth. And Baba listening to it and saying, good. And we know, as I say, Baba's taste in music, in singing, in books, in literature, is so the highest of the high, just like his divine stature. I've noted that again. I said, oh, look, Baba really has taste. Look at this. This English, this is what he meant. And yet he would listen to something so imperfect that it would irritate our ears. I said, oh, no, not that again. And I'd say to myself, now Baba goes like that, so the lady will ask, may I sing another one? And I'd say, no, oh, no, not another one. And Baba would... And then it took me some time to realize that we were looking at the surface. We were listening to the surface. Baba was looking through. And he was seeing the love with which this was come. It must have been done with real great love. Otherwise, it would not have been so acceptable to the Lord. We've known a lady come once, a woman who came once from Ahmednagar. She made some curry for Baba. Now, we knew... Yes. We knew that Baba, how much Baba had helped this person, this woman, through some disciple, really in her hour of need. And it was a tremendous thing. Nobody out in the world would do that to each other. But Baba had one of his disciples say, I want you to help, do this. So this woman was allowed to come here one day, and she brought this little curry with her. And Baba made such a big thing. He didn't make anything of what he had given. It was given in immense silence. Had we not been witnesses, we would never have known. But this, what she brings, Baba makes a big thing of it. Look, Mera, she brought me this curry. She cooked it with her own hands. What time did you get up? Now, that person's blushing and said, oh, Baba, I got up at 4:30 and I have 5 o'clock. Look, did you hear that? She got up at 5 o'clock and cooked this curry for me. Come, bring. Now, Mera, be sure it's on my... And then when he tastes it, and I tell myself, my God, a bit of curry? Wait, and look what he's done for her. This is nothing. Nothing could repay what he has done, even materially, let alone divinely. And then I realize that she must have cooked this little curry with so much love, so much thought of Baba. Only he would know. We wouldn't. We just see the curry, we see the woman, we see the situation. He sees the heart. There's so many stories Baba has made. We can only tell this endless, endless, like Baba. Mm-hmm. Oh, excuse me. Yes, Rick, there's this letter. Very recently, we've been listening more stories about Seclusion Hill, Mehrazad, than we have in all these years. Somehow, more stories are coming up. And some time ago, there was a Baba lover who said, the chiropractor who came with Robin. Ed
Jim Oppenheim.
And he told the story of how when he was a teenager and he had this dream that he was sitting on a hill and he was on top of the hill and he looked down and the whole world seemed to be beneath the hill. And he was feeling not well, and he was feeling miserable, and he wanted to go to the bathroom. And at that point, he found that he was also as an onlooker, that he was away from the hill. He could see himself, and he saw angels on top of the hill, and he was seated there, there, and he was telling them, himself, you don't know where you are, what sacred ground you are sitting on, things like that. Now, that was long before he ever heard of Mary Baba. So when he came here, and he went up Seclusion Hill, and he had gone up by himself, and there he sat, and suddenly he wasn't feeling comfortable, and he was feeling miserable, and he wanted to go to the bathroom. And then, wham, the whole thing came in front of him. And he looked round. This is the hill. This is it. Which brought to mind my dream, which I haven't told anyone for years. I'd only told Mara and the others. That was not long after Baba dropped his body. I dreamt that I was standing by our bathroom door, which looks out onto Seclusion Hill. And as if there's a line of people, and I know in my dream that they've just come down from Seclusion Hill, like this, and they are now going. And they're all singing. They're singing and playing the cymbal, you know, what we call chang. Like the bhajan makers, they have this chang, and then they're all singing. And I said to myself, I recognized one of them, the first one of them, and I said, that's Tukaram, Sant Tukaram, the perfect master. And then others came, and I said, oh, that must be Eknath. Oh, this must be, you know, all the saints, current of that time, perfect master, Gorakumbhar. I said, he must be that. And they just went by. They had been up on Seclusion Hill for darshan, and they were going by. So this was, I was reminded of by the incident that Jim Oppenheim said. So now we receive a letter from Brian Norell, who's in the film producing line. In fact, now he's making that picture called Twice Upon a Time, and he's connected with very high filmmakers and all. In fact, his picture's in the magazine. I was quite thrilled. So Rick will read out the letter. I thought it was interesting. We were going to read it yesterday.
Young English woman.
Oh, yes. No, I didn't know. Retired to his room, to his quarters, up on the hill. The last thing he did was visit each pet animal that we had. And we had a number. So far with Baba, we practically had pets of every variety. So Baba would go to the rabbit, he'd go to the turkeys, he'd go to the dogs and the cats and the birds, and every animal and pet we had. We had monkeys, we had horses. And even in the new life, Baba would give more importance, have them take care of them, have the monkey take care of the animals more than they would think of taking care of themselves. So early in the morning, way in the distance, we would see the men with the lanterns lit, chopping up the fodder for the cows and the camel and the horse and the bullock and the donkeys, and having time to snatch a cup of, mm-hmm. just a cup of tea, sometimes no time, just start on the road, start walking. Oh, yes. That's certainly the animals. Well, talking about animals, I can now tell you about...
Mm-hmm. You want to hear the rest of this? I think the other one was a little more short. This was another...
Dear Dr. Gohare, I think for the first time she's present to hear her own story, this particular part of her life with Baba, which I'm going to relate. And I'm doing it this for Anna Rosa and the Society, and you all might like to hear it again or hear it for the first time. Now, you know that Gohare became a doctor for Baba to come and be with him, to serve him. And Baba, you know, encouraged, would remind her now and then, see, you'll soon finish studies, you'll come, and oh, so much to do. He did the same with Dr. Donkin. There's a hospital that you'll be walking in, and hurry up, my boy, hurry up. And the same way he was encouraging, Gohare passed, became a doctor, came to Baba with a burning enthusiasm to serve him, and of course to be with him. And now look what Baba did. How tricky he is. But one didn't realize, Gaur didn't realize for quite some time. For him, it was more important that her enthusiasm be to be with him, to obey him, to love him. Of course she loved him. That's where she wanted to be with him. And to obey him and to do what he would want. That goes without question. So Gaur came and the first part of her obedience was that Baba got ducks and Baba got hens and Baba had a duck pond made and Baba had a pen round for the ducks and the hens to be sheltered. And who was to look after them? Who was to be their doctor or doctor? Dr. Gaur Irani. Just passed and done her experience, internship, and come to serve the avatar. And looking after ducks and hens for anybody else is a different matter. When you're doing it for Baba, you have to do it as if your life depended on it. Soon, we saw Gaur opening big, thick books about how to feed ducks, how to find out whether ducks are healthy or not, what to do about ducks. And then she would measure out their food, so much carbohydrate, so much coal, so much protein, so much calcium, and measure them in a little scale in which in India you measure gems and gold, you know? So we would often see, go ahead, as you went by, holding up a scale, looking at, you know, almost cross-eyed, is it exactly so-and-so? Bran, and Baba would ask her, how are the ducks? Are you doing it well? He would go and see, this one was Sash, this one was... You know, he was supervising, just like he would be supervising over the Mast Ashram or Mad Ashram, each one, and poor Gaur had to be responsible. Then the Bran, and nothing we could get from the bazaar by ourselves, ever, when we were with Baba. It had to go through Baba. So, if the Bran for the ducks was finished, it was to be told to Baba. And Baba would see that the Bran was supplied. So Baba told Gaur, you tell me ahead. Don't wait till the Bran is at the bottom of the tin. So much is left, you come and tell me, because it takes time to bring the Bran. So they will never be short of the Bran. One day, disaster. Gaur had forgotten to tell Baba about the Bran. And she found that the Bran was just about finished. Pale and tottering, she rushed out to the men's side. Where is Baba? Where is Baba? I have to find Baba. The Bran is finished. The Bran is finished. And Baba at that time was in one of the rooms here, and he was giving an interview to a man, a philosopher or something like that, who had asked Baba, could he come and see him? And Baba said, fine. So she didn't see the man. She just saw Baba. And as soon as she saw Baba, she rushed and said, Baba, the Bran for the ducks is finished. And Baba gave a smile, and then he looked at the other person and said, see, Baba was explaining to him about the seventh plane or something. The man was interested. See what I have to do? I have to come down from the seventh plane to the duck's level. And then Gaur happened to see, oh, that there was somebody there. Anyway, so that was the thing. Then, when she completely forgot that she's a doctor, Baba wiped it out, like you, a teacher wipes out what's written on the board. And she forgot that she's a doctor. Then Baba stopped attending to the ducks and the hens, and then she had to look for Baba. Now, in her, she was a physician, personal physician to Baba, and Baba never gave her the time to look up, because Baba was often relating symptoms that she couldn't have heard about or learned of. And that's how Baba works, you see. And so she would worry, and she would sometimes try and look up, and Baba would look at her and say, Gaur, my health is bad. I'm feeling this and this and this. What are you going to do about it? She said, well, Baba, I'm so rusty, I haven't had time to keep up, and I just don't know, but I'll look up. And then she decided that she'd call in another doctor to consult, to help her. When Baba heard that, and we were in Pune, Baba frowned, another doctor? What's a doctor going to do for me? It's you I want to do something for me. This is for my work. What's a doctor going to do to me? Oh, but Baba, you never let me see, and I'm so rusty, and I don't know how to treat you, and it worries me, and I don't sleep at night. At least I will know another doctor will tell me whether I'm doing the right thing or not. All right, said Baba, all right. But I'm not well at all. I'm terribly sick. So Gaur was allowed. So now in Guru Prasad, between the men's side and the women's side of the palace, there was a Mandali hall, small, and there was a Rani's room. The Rani's room we used as a passage. The ones who could go over to the Mandali, like I would go over to Erich's corner of the office to get the telegram address or a form or mail. Gohar would go over, Naja would go over for the food. So there were two doors. You got out of this door, past the Rani's room, exit from that door. And usually, automatically, when we were in a hurry, bang, the door would go. We'd go there, bang, the door would go that side. Now, you all may not suspect, but our dear Dr. Gohar, she's a lady of three voices. One, gentle, ordinary, as you see. One, when she's very excited. And one that she reserves for doctors. And so at last, when Baba said, all right, call the doctor, she went to the phone. And she was talking to the doctor in that doctor's voice. And we heard her, but I mean, we didn't think much of it because we were busy. So as I went by, maybe that door got loose from my hand and bang. So while she was saying, yes, doctor, of course, doctor. Whatever you say. Stop banging the door. Can't you see that I'm talking to the doctor? Oh, whenever it's convenient for you, doctor. I am quite ready. And don't bang that door again, madam. Please call the doctor. Of course. Any time that suits you. 3:30? Thank you, doctor. I'm so grateful. And I just glare. I can't believe it. I said, go ahead. You didn't even put your hand on. I don't know why. So, all right. My God. Then she had to dress, you know, the etiquette of doctors, doctor to doctor, it's quite different from human to human. You know? So she dressed in a sari. I don't know how she managed to get that time because Baba kept interrupting her, Baba kept calling her, Baba kept clacking for her. We helped. Somebody gave her a nice kerchief and, you know, gave her a little sand and someone's purse. And at last she was dressed in a sari, looking very decorous and very proper, and the time came. There was Baba seated at the end of the room, and the doctor comes in his own car, driving by himself, comes into the portico, a porte-cochere under the down the steps of the entrance, and Erich is waiting for him and to bring him in. Baba seated here, Gohar is by Baba. She goes over for the doctor. Now, just a minute before the car came, Baba, seated in that chair, was bent, looking fragile, looked up at Gaur and said, you have no idea how ill I am. And then, few seconds later, the doctor walks in, the other doctor walks in, the man, and Gaur with them, and I'm looking on, peeking on. And Baba's looking radiant. just light. And it's contagious. You know, you all feel bright. Oh, look at Baba. And the doctor comes. And Baba says to him, I'm so happy you came. Sit down, sit down. So the doctor sits down. Baba looks at him, and the doctor's very thin. He's like, looks like a stick or a dry corn on the cob, as we say, you know, very thin, very nice man, but I mean, looks very. So Baba said, sit down. So he sat, very straight face, no smile. And Baba says to him, how are you? How is your health? So he says, well, Baba, it's all right. But do you sleep well, says Baba. No, Baba, that's the trouble. I don't sleep in the night rounds. And Baba made a finger. That's no good. No. And then he says, do you eat well? Well, Baba, But what do you have for breakfast, says Baba? Now tell me in detail. Well, Baba, for breakfast I had this.
Is that all?
Well, yes, you see, but Baba, for lunch I have prawns. Every day prawns. Yes, prawns, Baba. And in the night, well, I have no time in the night always to... All right, said Baba. Forget all. Now you listen to me. Yes, Baba. You have this and this for breakfast. Yes, Baba. And then take such and such a tonic. Yes, Baba. And after, in the evening, in fact, we immediately saw that here was Baba the doctor and the doctor the patient. And he was saying, yes, Baba. Yes, Baba. Having fixed that, Baba started on a spiritual discourse. Eris says it was one of the best he has known. I mean, whether it was wasted on him or not, I can't tell. I may not be here 700 years later. But, you know, Baba gave a beautiful discourse. And he listened with great reverence. But how much went through, I don't know. And so Baba gave the discourse. And in the course of the discourse, Baba said, you know, in 9 months, I'm going to break my silence. In 9 months. Yes, Baba. Everything was yes, Baba. Then, when it was all done, and Baba said, giving not a single chance to Gohar, Baba says, go, you can go. So Gohar, she's the doctor going, and he's in the middle of the room, and Gohar hurries after him, doctor, and then suddenly he's aware that Dr. Gohar is here. So he turns around and looks at Baba, and he tells Gohar, don't worry, doctor. There's nothing the matter with the patient. but, doctor, his diet... Baba's calling. Poor Gohar comes running back to Baba. You know, he comes running back. And in the meantime, the other doctor goes onto his car, along with Eris, to get into the car. And here, Gohar is dying to, you know, contact the doctor. So when Baba's called us, that she had come. She's impatient. Baba says, hurry up, before he goes. Look, he's in the car, and the car will start. Tell him I'm going to break my silence in 9 months. Before Gohar could say, but Baba, he already knows. Hurry, don't you see the car is going? Hurry. But then Gohar forgets decorum, forgets etiquette. She lifts up her petticoat and she gallops across the floor like Charlie's aunt. Gallop. And from here she shouts in her third voice, stop! Stop! Daratobo! Daratobo! And Eric looks down and he stopped the doctor from driving up. Doctor, just a minute. Dr. Irani wants to say something. And Dr. Irani with petticoat up. Gallop, she goes. And down those marble steps, blah, 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 blah. And the doctor in the car is waiting with his head out, just looking out. He says, yes, doctor? And Gohar says, doctor, Baba's going to break his silence in 9 months. Yeah. Yes, he told me that. He told me that. And then he started the engine, and then he put his hand out of the car, patted Gohar's shoulder, and says, take it easy. Take it easy. And he drives away. Erich goes back, and poor Gohar, she comes back, not galloping, bent and tired, one foot at a time, she climbs those steps. And as she comes, there's Baba standing way there, sitting way there. And what do you think Baba looks like? The radiance has been turned off. And sitting like that. And when Gohar comes, he says, I'm, my health is so bad. What are you going to do about it? And Gohar says, after I change, I'll read up. I look up in the book.
You mean the doctor didn't give Baba a fee?
So get like it? Now you catch her there. Don't
yes,
let her get away.
We already stopped.
Oh, you did?
Yes. Now we got how you came to Baba.
We'll have to look.
We had to let Monty do the introduction. But, so that it'll hold the attention of the audience.
While we're all here, I'll tell you a little Gohar story, a very short one, which I've been telling Ana Rosa just now. That, you know, Gohar is shy. She's gentle and shy. So she will make very small, her own stories. Instead of bringing them out, she'll make them flat and small, you know. She doesn't want to be in the forefront of anything. So what happened once? It's so opposite of Narina. Narina, the artist. I mean, she could take a tiny little silly incident and she would make it, you know, big and artistic and beautiful. What happened when we were in Abu, like when we were anywhere, there would be a bell at the entrance, which would be quite some distance away, like from here, the entrance of Marazan. So there would be a string that goes right from the house to the gate. There'd be a bell here, and anybody coming, no one was allowed to enter, you see. So they would pull the string, and the bell would ring on the veranda of the residence we were with Baba. And when that bell rang, it meant somebody's at the gate. So Gohar is the one who had to go and find out. So one day when we were in Mount Abu, and the bell went tinkle, tinkle. It was a small bell. The entrance wasn't very far. And clink, clunk, tink, clunk, tink, clunk, tingling, tingling. So Gohar had left whatever she was doing. Oh, Marere, who's at the gate? And then she started. She went to the gate. Nobody. So what she did, she looked here. And she looked there. Nobody. So she came back mumbling. I don't know. Did you all hear the bell? Yes, I was. 3-4 seconds later, tingling, 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 tingling. Marere, who could it be? I just saw nobody was there. And again, she goes, looks here, looks there, nobody. So when it happened the third time, she thinks it's those flattered children, some children from there who are trying to, you know, make a fool of me and my poor legs, and I'm so tired in my back. And so she says, I'm going to find out who's done it. So she lay low, just peeking. And who do you think was doing it? The sparrows. They were sitting on the string going, click, click. And as they went, tingling, tingling, tingling. So when Gohar was looking, oh, Marere, the brother tell us, these are only the sparrows. And we had such one when we told Baba. Now, when I told her to tell that story, I said, Gohar, you remember that story? Oh, yes, those sparrows sat on the string and the I said, if it was Marina, what she would have done.
Adame Baba PJ.
I think it is quarter past twelve. You get ready to be on Mehra's porch. Maybe after tea, after 4 o'clock, we may have a little half an hour again.
Holding the mug and then we did that every day, but it's nice to think of it, you know, just now. And Baba seated the patient, they talk about how much is that about how it is, and so on. That was now is Dharamsara, that is a Dharamsara now. It becomes so useful. The Baba knew the future will be useful to his, for his lovers, and it is very useful, big room. So, invite walking all the lovers to help as well as supervise, you know, that. So, to walk over from the station, you know, station line, the station track, what's called. And there was a post office. And there we lived in that room, and Baba was on the veranda. And though it was very cold, even then, Baba slept on the veranda, open veranda, now in the dark. Would you like to be in the veranda? Jai Baba. Jai Baba. Jai Baba. So Baba, without a mosquito net, anything, just outside on open veranda. Now, when the night time, I think of all the details about Baba. I feel so, this thing hurt. Sorry, we didn't have an idea that we were using a nice, warm, big room. And here Baba's out on the veranda. And he's the King of Kings, and he's sleeping without any even a muscle net, and just tie a small bedding, you know, thin mattress, and very, very, it's very dangerous to sleep like that in Nebuchadnezzar nighttime, you know, when it's very cold. Reptiles, you know, snakes want a nice warm corner, they also, they might crawl into bed, who knows? Mm. But it never happened, and so on. I won't say, anyway, but as I want to say is this, scorpions we have, but we have did away with many scorpions in Mela, but you have no idea how we cleaned it. Yeah. So, yeah, but Bob was tea, and so we brought in the pail, and we had and this thing, what I used to do it in cold, and then feel the temperature quickly. It shouldn't be cold. The tea shouldn't be the right, it should be right temperature. So when it's right temperature, still hot, but the steam is not steaming, so then we put it in front of Baba. And Baba feels the night, and Baba drinks slowly from the lotus. No, lotus is mug, not a straight mug, it's sort of like this. You've seen it, like a vase. Yeah, that's a lotus.
You mean all of this is with the lotus, with no handle or anything?
No handle. That is why you can't touch it when it's hot. You must have seen it.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's very common here, you know. Aluminum ones we have for bath and washing face and all. What I want to say is this. So Baba had his tea like that every day, you know, from the pail, you know, cold, made it cold, the cold water in the pail, deva. And so that was Baba's tea, and we all had to wait till our glasses got cool and all. So there's plenty of time. There's no worry in Mela, but just we four women with my mother, five. Because Baba had promised my mother that he will call her to stay in Mehrabad because she wanted to be with Baba, you know. That time Baba was not staying permanently in Mehrabad. Baba was coming to Pune, from Bombay to Pune, other places, outstation, then come to Bombay, then come to Pune for 3-4 days to some Baba lover's house he would stay. Very few days. So all the ones who were Baba lovers in those days, following Baba, very few. They, Hindus, and very, very few Westerns, you know. Very few, 2, 3, 4, I don't know. So they also gather around Baba and they should be singing and all that and that. Yeah, Baba loves her. There are many. There was some Mohammedan, you know, Aminabai, Ramju. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then Hindu. Well, I can see who's a Hindu. Patil. What's his name? Patil something. No, Patil. Something Patil. Anyway, in his house, Baba used to stay also. The other house, I don't know. Only two houses. And so Baba used to visit there, then used to be singing and all that, and then we all used to go, my mother, knowing Baba, wanted to be with Baba in his presence, so she would be seated, and Baba, you know, asked, do you want to ask him something? Baba in those days would ask others. Nowadays Baba never asked, you know. So my mother said, yes, Baba, I would like to serve you and stay with you or something like that. Baba said, how can I do that? I'm not staying in the same place, I mean, permanently in Mehrabad. But when I decide to stay permanently in Mehrabad, then I will call you. So he promised her first, and she was the first woman to come to stay, want to serve Baba and stay with Baba. She was the first one to have the idea. So I was promised, and he did, what do you call it? Okay. Keep his promise? Yeah. So we went Pune, 1924 maybe. It was. And so Baba's telegram came to say that you can come as soon as possible, but you must bring a trunk full of clothes that last you for a whole year, and a bedding, and so on. So the whole house, though it had many valuable things also there. And so, yeah, there was an iron safe and whatnot. And so, Mama said, we don't think of anything. We want to go to Baba, we go just without thinking of all these things, you know, we put a padlock on the door and we go. So anyway, she was very busy having things stitched at the tailor, new blouses for me, her, and so everything new, it has to last for a year. So that took time, of course. She must have had two tailors to do her thing because they could do fast anyway. And all these things they brought. And I'm mother packed and very happy with ourselves. Yeah, and then we came to Mehrabad. And we stayed there for 20 days. Means very first women to live night and day. Baba had not allowed anybody, not in Gulmai. She came in the morning, went away after 2 hours. But we stayed there night and day, but not in post office. In the post office, that's a big room, and a nice big veranda that's occupied by the mandali, you know. And the mandali, were maybe more than 6, 8, or 10 of them. There are many of them. Maybe 8, I think. Ramju was there, there were Hindus there, the rest of them, all mixed there with Baba. They stayed on the veranda, inside the room, whatever they decide, you know. But that's our first day with Baba. And you know, this building that with Padre now used to stay, you know, from Mama's room, that it was at the end of the building. There were two nice rooms, very good condition they were in. And so, yeah, we were staying there. Before that, we had been to Quetta with Baba, you know. This is a long story, we were in Boston. So, we were there and Baba is being the Mandali. One day Baba came over. Baba didn't used to come over so often, once he came, you know. And I was washing pots and pans and dishes, whatever it was, outside. There was no sink, anything inside. There was just two rooms. So, a big tub, you know, this big thing with the tap, and I used to wash. And the Mandali is, from the Mandali only, nervous, you know, his name, he's a very young man. He was supposed to fill this tub from the well. He has to draw water, fill those two big boxes, tin boxes, you know, what do you call them? Kerosene boxes. It held one pail and a half, means three pails at a time they had to lift. And the rod here, with the padding and the rod, and those two things, bottles full of water. And he used to bring it from there and pour it in that chair. I was washing pots. And he was a very nice person. He was very clean of heart, very fine. He loved Baba very dearly. So one day he happened to tell me that, do you know how fortunate you are? He said, no, but you don't know Baba's status. You don't know this and that. He talked only of Baba and his status. Mandal and me and this and that and so on. I was very interested, sir. But Baba has seen us from far, you know. When he came to our room, you know what he asked me? At first, I talked to the elders, you know. Of course, Baba always wanted to tell the elders what he wanted to tell them, that the food is... He told Baba's old aunt, oh no, she was fine, strong. She and my mother used to cook for the Mandali and Baba, eat from the same food, and our food. Everything cooked in a big cooking pot, and so on. Dal and rice every day. So they were cooking. So Baba came in one day, coming from post office, is far distant, you know, middle is the main road. The other side is that tree now where the bricks and things growing, because I want the post office being pulled down, so it's a shame. But I want now neem trees growing, so I send them there to be, planted in that place. So Ted Jetson, in his generous way, good hard way, he had the bricks laid. Goats don't eat that small plants and all, so and Daddy's supposed to look after him. So every time Daddy says Jai Baba to me, Jai Baba. When Daddy says Jai Baba to me, you know, I was saying, and Jai Baba, but see that the trees are still growing. That's my way of greeting him, so he's always maybe afraid of to say Jai Baba to me, because I will catch him about the trees. But I explained to him that this is a very sacred place for us, because Baba lived in the post office on this land where the post office was, very first Baba lived with the Mandali. Then when we women came, of course, the Mandali were not there. There were only three of them. Padri was planted in that place. So Ted, that's a name tree growing, so pot and so on. Dal and rice every day. So they were cooking. So Baba came in one day, coming from post office, is far distant, you know, middle is the main road. The other side is that tree now where the bricks and things growing, because I want the post office being pulled down, so it's a shame. But I want now neem trees growing, so I send them there to be, planted in that place. So Ted Jetson, in his generous way, good hard way, he had the bricks laid by the... goats don't eat that small plants and all, so and Daddy's supposed to look after him. So every time Daddy says Jai Baba to me, Jai Baba. When Daddy says Jai Baba to me, you know, I was saying, and Jai Baba, but see that the trees are still growing. That's my way of greeting him, so he's always maybe afraid of to say Jai Baba to me, because I will catch him about the trees. But I explained to him that this is a very sacred place for us, because Baba lived in the post office on this on this land where the post office was. Very first Baba lived here with the Mandlis, and when we women came, of course the Mandlis were not there. There were only three of them, Padri, Gustavji, and Naja's old father was there. But Baba had used it very first time also to rest in there in the nighttime sleep, and then the daytime he's on the veranda. He used to sing bhajans, you know, Tukaram bhajan. Mm-hmm. And that's how the villagers were drawn to Baba. Otherwise Baba, fair of skin, hair like this, and white, clean sadra, they could not make out who's this, from far this to go on the road, and they want to know who is this person, because in there the sadhus are with dark skin, you know, not shaven or with beard or I don't know what. Anyway, the lotus fashion, they would see, seated in the outward show, there's much, but whatever, Baba was not that way, he was in his white sadra and like that. So they didn't come to Baba. They didn't know what nationality he was. They could not make out. So anyway, but